to the NXT Podcast, your home for weekly NXT reviews and insight.
The beautiful part of NXT is that when one dream ends, another dream begins.
Find all of your NXT news, recaps, and analysis right here. So with that being said, we only have one question for you.
Are you ready?
We thought so. Let's get the show started right now.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the NXT Podcast. Once again, my name is Zachary Smith. I am your host each and every week, running down what happened this week on NXT. We are officially past the road to TakeOver War Games. That's going to take place on Sunday. We have all of our matches set for War Games, including the men's and women's teams for that event. We figured we knew who those teams were going to be, but we had our last members solidified, and we had some interaction between the two teams to set this up, so it should be a fun pay-per-view. And as always, we had the go-home show, or the last TV show before that pay-per-view. That's where you solidify your card, and you build intrigue at the last minute, and you give people a reason to want to watch whatever pay-per-view you have coming up. Now, recently, WWE has had some trouble with their go-home shows just because their TV is not very consistent. But NXT is always really good, number one, at putting on takeovers. Each takeover seems to be better than the last one, or at least there aren't any disappointments at takeover. NXT has a streak of I don't even know how long since the early days of takeovers being really, really good. And I do not think that War Games is going to be any different. We'll talk about the matches for War Games as we go along. Now, as always, you can find me on Twitter. I am at ZachNXT. That's at ZachNXT. We're always talking about wrestling and other fun stuff over there if you want to join in. Also, if you want to hear anything on the show, I take suggestions from there. A lot of stuff from there ends up in the show. Now, this episode is coming to you one day late. This is brought to you by your old buddy Zach having two jobs and on Thursday having to work both of those. So let Matt know that we were going to have to do it today, as that was when I was free, because I think that me doing the podcast either in between or after two jobs in the same day would not have been the most interesting podcast that you could ever listen to. So, here we are. So, thankfully, I'm just a day behind and get this in before TakeOver. So, we don't have news and notes here today because, really, the big thing that happened this week, and we see it at the beginning of NXT, everybody standing on the ramp in silence, and there's a picture of Pat Patterson, and they're all paying tribute to Pat, who passed away here this week. And we'll talk about that just a little bit here. Pat Patterson was a huge influence on everything from early to late and current WWE. He was Vince's right-hand man at different times. He's been one of the big creative forces behind WWE just about since the beginning. You hear stories of Vince and Bruce Pritchard, who's still in WWE, and Pat Patterson, who would go to Vince's house and sit by his pool and book matches. They would make the decisions for what they were going to have on TVs and pay-per-views, and Vince had, at the time, a very small circle. So now you hear stories of, you know, 100,000 writers and agents and things like that. At the time, in the early days, you didn't have that. You essentially had Bruce Pritchard, you had Pat Patterson, and you had Vince McMahon. And they essentially kind of lived that and were always booking. because it's the three of them essentially is the creative driving force behind however many superstars they had at the time. And Pat Patterson, no matter who you talk to, is known as an incredible creative mind. And he was very good at coming up with match concepts or match finishes or ways to make things interesting. And at different times, he's been an on-air talent. He's been a right-hand man. He's been kind of on the outside looking in. He's done the old wrestler thing of walking away, but then coming back. And he's been a huge influence on a lot of different people. And he had a fantastic in-ring career that doesn't get talked about a lot in his early days before he came to WWE. And the famous story of him winning the, I believe, Intercontinental title in Rio de Janeiro that they would always talk about, which is a tournament that they would always talk about that didn't actually take place. They had a lot of fun with that. And Pat was just a guy that, if you didn't know anything about the backstage part, which, you know, I didn't know until I heard Bruce Pritchard talk about it on Something to Wrestle With, where Pat was an integral part of everything that was going on. But if you didn't know that, you knew Pat Patterson as the guy from the Attitude Era. He was part of the Stooges with Briscoe, just a two-man team of older guys that were all about Vince McMahon and were up his butt and butt kissers. And they provided a lot of funny entertainment during the Attitude Era. They were the Let Me Up segments a lot of times. The Let Me Up segment is usually when you have a show and you have big action, big action, big action. The thinking goes that you need a Let Me Up match or a match that isn't as big or as funny or is not as serious so that the audience can kind of reset. And they had a few of those, and as part of the corporation with Vince and Shane and Patterson and Briscoe, they were essentially like the muscle, which was funny for a time because you had these two older guys who could still go, and they were both great on the mic and they were both great with Vince and had a great dynamic. So since the early days of the Attitude Era, you've been seeing Pat Patterson on your TV, and then you come to find out that he actually was one of the three big people booking in the early days, and he's a big part of the Royal Rumble concept and just ironing out what that would look like. And to this day, if you are a wrestling fan and you're going to show wrestling to somebody who is not a wrestling fan, your best bet is a Royal Rumble, because it is the most fun that WWE is that Royal Rumble match. Even if you don't watch wrestling, you don't know anybody, it's very easy to get the concept of people are in the ring and you get eliminated by getting thrown off the top rope. The Royal Rumble that Drew McIntyre won to go to WrestleMania was one of the best ones in years, and you had Brock Lesnar in the ring for a lot of it. You can do a lot of fun things with a Royal Rumble, and Pat Patterson was a huge part of making that a reality. And I imagine that a lot of the ideas that we still see today are ideas that Pat Patterson came up with. It's impossible to parse out what was a Vince thing, what was a Bruce Pritchard thing, and what was a Pat Patterson thing, but it can never be discounted that he was in the room for a lot of these decisions, and I suspect he had a lot to do with a lot of them. I remember him being on Legends House with Roddy Piper and Mean Gene Okerlund and a few other people. And I remember that emotional scene where he comes out as gay on Legends House. And it was interesting because, you know, most people, I think, knew that Pat was gay. But he had never really talked about it. And it's not something that would necessarily come up, especially on WWE programming. And he didn't do, you know, a ton of interviews that people were watching right at the time. So I don't know how open he was with it to the men and women in the back versus the fans that you know we knew but we had never heard him talk about. But it was cathartic for him to finally be able to tell these people that he came up in the business with and that he greatly respected that, you know, I am a gay man. And at that point, I don't know how old he was, but he was an older guy. And, you know, he broke down and cried in a really powerful moment of, you know, a legend just opening up to his friends and compatriots in this business. And you have openly gay wrestlers, I believe Jake Atlas, where WWE doesn't focus on it, but it is important, you know, if somebody is comfortable being out, I think it's important just in terms of representation and painting that picture as more inclusive for all of wrestling. And I think that, you know, as much as Legends House just kind of passed by and it was a fun little thing on the network, I think that's my highlight from Legends House is that moment, because I think that it's important that Pat Patterson felt comfortable and confident enough to talk to them about it and, you know, was able to say, you know, I'm a legend in the ring and I'm a legend backstage and I'm an openly gay man. And I always felt like that was important and doesn't get talked about a lot because people kind of knew he was gay. But I think it's a different level to come out and say it to people who you don't know how they're going to react and to say it on the WWE Network so you know that fans are going to see it. And we're going through a slideshow while Frank Sinatra's My Way is playing, and it shows clips of Pat Patterson singing karaoke. They would say that he would always come out to karaoke bars and he would always sing the same song, and people got a kick out of that. I assume that was Frank Sinatra's My Way. I don't remember hearing what the song was that he would always sing, but it seems like it was My Way by Frank Sinatra. If you're going to do karaoke, that's not a bad choice. That's a pretty easy song to remember, and it gives you a little room to show off. I like that choice. And during this, there's slideshow pictures and videos of him with virtually every star in WWE. He has been around since the beginning, and he's worked with literally everyone. He's worked with everyone from Hulk Hogan and Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker to Triple H and John Cena and Edge and Batista, all the way up to now. He's worked with everyone. And it just in terms of being a creative guy with the matches and being good at finishes and match concepts, he's worked closely with, it seems like, every major superstar that has been in WWE. And that really showed in those pictures where he's backstage or before a show talking to the men and women, and you could just imagine them coming up with ideas for their matches, and he's worked with everyone. This feels a bit like when Dusty Rhodes died, someone that has been a humongous legend in the business, but for the current superstars is a mentor. They've helped a lot of people in one way or the other. And like Dusty Rhodes, everybody seems to have a Pat Patterson story and a Pat Patterson impression. And I think it's kudos to Pat Patterson for, in his time, not only being a legend in the ring, but helping the business going forward and working with new talent. And it's very special in wrestling when you can touch the lives of many, many generations of superstars. And there's building blocks of WWE. Vince is one, for better or worse. I think that Bruce Pritchard is one. Dusty Rhodes is one. Ric Flair is one. Hulk Hogan. There's a lot of Undertaker. There's a lot of different ones. And Pat Patterson is absolutely on that list. And just kudos to him for being able to do that as a backstage personality and having such an impact on the business and WWE. And you can still see his fingerprints on a lot of what goes on in WWE now. And I think he's going to be remembered as an absolute legend and somebody who helped WWE get to where it is now. And whatever you think of the creative direction and all of that, it's a very, very successful company. And when they were stressed about the first WrestleMania in 1985 and Vince had to mortgage his house to get it done, you know, if you had told them that one day they were going to be the biggest wrestling company in the world, I don't know if they would have believed you, but Pat Patterson has a lot to do with that. So we go from that tribute to Damian Priest in the ring. It's going to be a tag team match. We're gearing up for the triple threat match at War Games. It's going to be Leon Ruff, the North American champion, defending in a triple threat against Damian Priest and Johnny Gargano. And Johnny Gargano's on commentary. They're staring each other down. He says hi to Priest, and he tells him to go find another mesh shirt, you goof. Tells him to be a professional. Leon Ruff's music hits, and Johnny just goes, ugh, not this guy. So Leon Ruff is Damian Priest's partner. We see a clip earlier of Damian Priest having a run-in with Legado del Fantasma backstage. He basically runs one of the members into, it looks like a garage door backstage. And so we have this match being set up. It's Santos Escobar and Raul Mendoza from Legado del Fantasma representing today. So Leon Ruff convinces Damian Priest to let him start, and he's immediately overpowered by the Cruiserweight Champion, and the Cruiserweight Champion is quite a bit bigger than him. It looks really odd to have the North American Champion be the smallest guy in a match that includes the Cruiserweight Champion, but I mean, I guess that's part of Leon Ruff's whole story. He gets a little bit of offense, as in like one drop kick on Raul Mendoza, but other than that, Leon Ruff just sells. I think through this whole thing, I have seen like a handful of offensive moves from Leon Ruff. He is a dude that gets beat up and is good at getting beat up. So it's going to be interesting to see how they do that with a triple threat match. I don't know. It feels like Leon Ruff's going to retain the title, but we'll see. So we have an alright match, and Damian Priest is setting up for the Reckoning, and then Leon Ruff tags him. And then Damian Priest smiles and hits the Reckoning, and then Leon Ruff hits a splash from the top rope that doesn't look like anything because Leon Ruff is very small and doesn't seem very heavy, and then gets the pin, so Leon Ruff and Damian Priest win. So the two of them are talking smack with Johnny at commentary, and then there's two ghost faces that appear in the cage behind Johnny. These ghost faces made sense for Halloween Havoc, but it's weird that they're still around, like we can't know who they are. So we assume that one of them is Austin Theory, one of them was Indy Hartwell, but now there's two, and Indy Hartwell's not under the other one. So I don't know if there's two more ghost faces, which is even weirder, or if that was just having another ghost face just cuz, and it's just Austin Theory. I'm a little bit confused, and I'm not sure why in storyline they're still running around with ghost face masks on. I'm not sure what that's doing. Whatever. But we have a teaser for Team Shotzi at War Games. We have Shotzi, Ember Moon, and Rhea Ripley announced, and then the fourth member is blacked out, so it's a surprise. And it hasn't been announced yet, but it's going to have to be announced on this show. And I would assume then that it's going to be Io Shirai, because I can't really think of who else it would be, especially on such short notice. And then we cut from there to the ring, and Austin Gray is in the ring, and then Cameron Grimes is out next. So, I forget where I heard it, but I heard somebody talking about Austin Gray, and he's a very talented guy that's relatively new here, and it looks like he'll be our enhancement talent for the evening. Cameron Grimes has a bag with him, looks like an old Jake the Snake Roberts bag, but the bag has a strap in it because his match with Dexter Lumis at War Games will be a strap match. Grimes right now is very cocky about it, he's talking trash, but as soon as he sees Lumis, he gets really scared, and then as soon as he doesn't see Lumis anymore, just in day-to-day, he gets very cocky again, and it's great because Cameron Grimes is great. It's hard to set up a match with Dexter Lumis because he doesn't talk and he just kind of does the same shtick. So I feel like Cameron Grimes is really carrying this from a character perspective to make me want to watch it. So Austin Gray's getting more offense than you would think in this match. He looks good. It's like a mini showcase for him here, just a little bit of offense. It's a smart way to do this because Cameron Grimes still looks good, but you shine some light on a new guy. You could have Cameron Grimes just run over this guy, but one, that's not the character that Cameron Grimes is. And number two, if you have plans for this Austin Gray guy, then the first time you see him on TV, you'd at least want to see some impressive stuff from him, and you did here. So the next time I see Austin Gray, I'll be more interested than if he just got beat up. So it kind of helps everybody as opposed to just helping Cameron Grimes. So you can do a lot of stuff like that with an enhancement talent. It doesn't have to be just run them over. But Grimes eventually does hit the cave in to win, and then Cameron Grimes puts the strap on Gray's arm and clotheslines him. Well, he's talking trash to Loomis. He starts hitting Gray with the strap. The last time we had a strap match in WWE was the Royal Rumble when Daniel Bryan challenged the then Universal Champion, The Fiend. It was, I want to say their second match after The Fiend targeted Daniel Bryan, and Daniel Bryan was frustrated that The Fiend kept getting away from him, so they had the strap match. It's still, I think, The Fiend's best match in WWE. The Fiend is a presentation. He's not necessarily a match guy. I don't mind his matches, but I wouldn't call them great, but I think that one was, and I think that has a lot to do with Daniel Bryan, obviously. So strap matches are kind of hard to do, it seems like. They can be limiting because you literally have your arm strapped to another person. So there's stuff you're going to have to do more carefully, and you're going to have less room to work. But creative guys can work around it and make it a positive instead of a negative. And I think that these two guys can do that. Dexter Lumis appears in the ring and starts whipping Cameron Grimes with the strap as Cameron Grimes runs away. We get a little teaser explaining War Games. Basically, two people start in the ring for 5 minutes, and then every 3 minutes after that, someone from each team. So in the men's match, it'll be two people in the ring, and then a bad guy, then a good guy, then a bad guy, then a good guy. Every 3 minutes, somebody gets released from a cage into the match until all the wrestlers are in the cage, and then the match starts. So we cut from that to the ring. It's a live session of Thatch's Thatch Can with Timothy Thatcher. That was hard to say. There was a lot of T's and a lot of H's. He says, today's lesson is about distractions. A lot of people in NXT lose via distraction. Either somebody's music plays or somebody gets on the apron. And Thatcher turns back around and he had a student behind him. And now standing next to that student is Tommaso Ciampa. Ciampa wants to fight, but Thatcher says, I told you I don't have any problem with you, and starts to leave the ring, and Ciampa calls him a disappointment. Thatcher says, I know what you're trying to do, man, and then Thatcher takes him down. And then Ciampa hits Thatcher with a right hand and decks him, and then Timothy Thatcher's student attacks Ciampa as they take over. Don't know why Ciampa forgot that there was a student there. Feels like there was a lesson to be learned about distractions there. If you had just listened instead of interrupting people, could have learned something. They fight for a bit until they're back. They fight outside of the ring and then get back in until Thatcher puts Ciampa in a front face lock and then just drops him and chokes him out. I'm not at this point sure if that's going to be a takeover match or not. It ends up being one, Timothy Thatcher versus Tommaso Ciampa. So that'll be fun. They've had a little bit of an issue brewing that hasn't really been on the forefront, but Ciampa and Thatcher should have a really good match, so I am down. So we have Dexter Lumis and Cameron Grimes in a strap match. We have the North American title match with Gargano and Priest challenging Leon Ruff. We have the men's and women's War Games match. We have a lot of interesting matches. We have Thatcher and Ciampa. So the interesting thing here is that we don't, as of yet, have a tag team title match. We don't have, as of yet, a cruiserweight title match. So really the only title that it seems like is going to be on the line is the North American title in that triple threat match, because Io Shirai is the women's champion, and she's in the War Games match. I don't think Finn Balor's cleared yet. I think that you don't really need him on this show, I suppose. But I think that if they could have had him back, they would have. Maybe because War Games, or this takeover is going to be about the War Games match, maybe they felt like they didn't have to rush him back to defend the NXT title, but they also haven't stripped him of the title. So, I mean, he is still the NXT champion, which would indicate to me that he's going to be back sooner rather than later, because if he was going to be gone for a long time, they would have just taken the title off of him. But he's been back on the ring cutting promos, but he got interrupted by the McAfee boys, and as soon as stuff turned physical, Finn got out of the ring, which makes me think that he can't do physical stuff yet, or they want to hold it off for a while. And we haven't seen him do anything in the ring other than a promo yet, so I wonder if we're like right around the corner from him being ready to go, but he's not yet. And so to distract from the fact that he hasn't had a match in a while, we're putting him on TV and so on and so forth, but we're not having him defend the title. And I mean, again, you have the War Games matches as your main event, so you don't need it. But I'd be interested to see when we're going to see Finn back in the ring, because clearly they're not taking the title off of him. So they must know something we don't know, that he's ready to come back soon. But I guess we'll see. So we have essentially one title match, which is interesting. I haven't heard just about anything about the tag team titles. The Cruiserweight champion was just in a tag match that they lost handily. And women's titles not being defended, NXT titles not being defended. I mean, it's okay, you know, in a takeover War Games, because War Games is your main event. It's just interesting. It didn't occur to me that we're not going to have but one title match on this show. So we'll see how that goes. So Thatcher's being interviewed, and he said that tonight Ciampa learned about distractions, and Sunday he's going to learn about respect. So that's official. It feels like Timothy Thatcher needs to win. I don't remember the last time I saw him win a big match. Feels like Thatcher needs it more than Ciampa. Seems like Ciampa's going to win, but it feels like Thatcher needs it more. But, I mean, we'll see. It should be a really good match regardless. So next, it's going to be Raquel Gonzalez versus Shotzi Blackheart. Much like last week with Kyle O'Reilly and Pete Dunne, the winner of this ladder match gets the advantage for their team. So they're having a good match, and then it seems like Raquel Gonzalez is going to win, and both teams are fighting at ringside. So Raquel Gonzalez is on the rungs of the ladder, and Io gets on the apron and jumps from the top rope onto Raquel's back, who's on the ladder, which, boy, seems like it'd be hard to do onto another person who's probably sweating, and you just jumped. It seems like there's a big margin for error with that move, and they pulled it off, but I'm always scared that they're going to like slide off or something stupid. But Io jumps onto Raquel's back and brings her down the ladder. Raquel charges Io, and she dumps her over the top rope, and then she gets on the top rope of the post and moonsaults from the top rope onto all the women and takes everybody out with security. So with the distraction, because none of these people learn from Thatcher, all he's trying to do is teach you and you won't learn his lessons, Shotzi's now the only one in the ring, and she goes up the ladder, grabs the briefcase, and gets the advantage for her team. This makes sense. The bad guys have the advantage in the men's War Games match. The good guys have the advantage in the women's War Games match. So the matches won't be set up to be the same. So in this case, that means that in the women's match, two people, a good guy and a bad guy, are going to start. And then the next person that comes in is going to be a good guy. So the good guys are going to have an advantage until 3 minutes go by and a bad guy comes in. In the men's match, a good guy and a bad guy are going to start, and then a bad guy is going to come in. So you have two bad guys and one good guy for 3 minutes until you even it back up. So fundamentally, these advantages are going to create different kinds of matches, because in the men's match, you're going to have bad guys beating up good guys for a while, and vice versa in the women's match. That gives you wiggle room, because with the advantages, you can plan those matches differently and don't have to worry about one looking too much like the other, which is very helpful because you don't want to have them set up the same, because there's immediately going to be comparisons and then one's just going to look like the other. So, as expected, Io Shirai has joined the women's War Games team. So, for the women's side, it's going to be Shotzi Blackheart, Ember Moon, Rhea Ripley, and Io Shirai versus Candice LeRae, Dakota Kai, Raquel Gonzalez, and again, for some reason, Toni Storm. Still no word from Toni Storm as to why she joined this team or turned into a bad guy. There wasn't anything, as far as I can see, for her to be mad about or have a grudge about. And this is a team of people who lose in big matches as opposed to the good guy team. And so it seems like we just needed one more bad guy for the women's War Games match. So here we are. Whatever, that's fine. Toni Storm's very talented, but it's weird to me when you turn somebody into a bad guy and then they never explain why. But that's fine. So for the men's War Games match, we have the McAfee boys. So Pat McAfee, Oney Lorcan, Danny Burch, and Pete Dunne versus the Undisputed Era of Adam Cole, Kyle O'Reilly, Bobby Fish, and Roderick Strong. Undisputed Era weren't lying when they said they made this match famous in NXT. They're undefeated. It feels like they are no longer going to be undefeated. Feels like the McAfee boys are going to take this one, but I'm not sure. But either way, we're going to have a really good takeover. So I hope that you enjoy takeover. Again, I am on Twitter. I am at ZachNXT. That's at ZachNXT. Let me know there. What is the match that you're most excited for coming up on TakeOver? And what are your thoughts on TakeOver after it happens? Did the matches deliver? Did the War Games matches deliver? Who do you think is going to win the War Games matches? Who do you think is leaving as the North American champion? I look forward to hearing what you think. Otherwise, I will be back with you next week. We will touch on TakeOver then. I'll probably be tweeting about it a bit over there if you want to come check it out. Otherwise, enjoy TakeOver. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. My name, as always, is Zachary Smith. I have been your host. You have been fantastic. Have a wonderful day, and thank you for listening.